happy Monday. Good to have you here to start the week. And we have, again, a lot to talk about, but it's nice to see you back in the saddle.
Oh, yeah. I made it through.
You have a nice birthday weekend. I didn't know. I didn't know how. I didn't know if you were going to come out on the other side.
I did.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So you got to celebrate with the family over the weekend.
And there's going to be a big party this weekend. So, you know.
The fun continues.
It continues.
Very good. Very good. How about them Tigers?
Man.
They beat Seattle yesterday 5-4. They win the series.
Okay.
Which is all you can ask for.
That's it.
I don't need you to win every single game on your schedule.
No, I don't need you to lose every game either.
Fair point. Fair point. I don't need that either. But you just got to win series.
You just got to win
the series.
That's it. Yeah.
Take 2 or 3, 3 or 4, whatever it is.
Yep.
And we're good. You'll be one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah.
But Kevin McGonigal just continues to rake.
Absolutely rake. He does it.
He homered in the fourth inning. And had a 2-run single off Andrés Muñoz, who is an all-star closer.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best closers in the game, with 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth, and walked it off, scored 2 runs there. And they beat Seattle 5-4. And, again, you just look at what he's doing, he doesn't get a day off. It's unbelievable. He had 2 hits, 3 RBI, the home run, and a walk.
He's consistent, man. A lot more consistent than I think anybody on that team.
I mean, pretty darn close. Dingler's had a little bit of pop this year. He's had a little bit of power.
Yeah.
And he's played really, really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, for Kevin McGonigal to be doing what he's doing.
It seems like Kevin knows where to hit it, too, when it's time. You know, if he's got somebody on base and stuff, he knows exactly where to put it. So
he just puts it in play.
Yes.
He just puts it in play. And when you can do that. He's borderline an all-star player now.
Yeah.
So, yes. I mean, win the series, it's all you can do. 27-39, they're 16-15 at home. Just incrementally climb your way back. That's what you got to do.
You got to crawl before you walk.
That's exactly right.
Police in Toledo, Ohio, continuing searching for suspects after that shooting near the popular Old West End Festival. It left 12 people wounded Saturday evening. Authorities say at least 2 gunmen were likely shooting at each other when gunfire erupted near the crowded festival, sending hundreds of attendees running for safety. Victims ranged in age from 14 to 61. Police say all 12 are in stable condition. They are recovering. Investigators are reviewing surveillance footage, asking festival goers to share photos and videos if they have them so they can help identify those responsible. No arrests have been made so far. The annual festival, known for its live music and food vendors, historic home tours, canceled the final day of activities yesterday. You know, when you get to people who don't know how to handle guns and they're shooting at each other.
Well, you shouldn't be handling a gun out in a crowd.
Not at a festival. Anyway, why are you bringing a gun to a festival? You know, it's a family event. You got kids there, you know, and why are you doing that?
Yeah, it's a shame. The police say that there's a lot of evidence that they have. It's just a matter now of going through it.
Yeah.
But they still haven't caught these gunmen. They haven't been taken into custody, at least as of early this morning.
That's right.
So they're still looking at it, but it was a very scary event. Very scary event. 12 people injured. A couple people were in serious critical condition.
Yeah.
So they're continuing to investigate that, but a scary situation down in Toledo.
Another scary situation that happened yesterday evening, this time in New York. 6 people injured. Suspect is in custody following a mass stabbing at New York's Penn Station. The New York City Fire Department says emergency crews responded to the major transit hub about 7 last night. First responders treated 6 victims, transporting 5 to Bellevue Hospital, 1 to Cornell Hospital, with injuries ranging from minor to serious. Amtrak police quickly apprehended the suspect, and an investigation is underway. Now, this violence comes just a day before President Trump and the New York City mayor are scheduled to attend Game 3 of the NBA Finals at Madison Square tonight, which sits directly above Penn Station. So, as you know, security has been heavily tightened in the area for tonight's game.
Yeah, the president and Mondami going to a basketball game. How about that?
Yeah. Now, whether they sit
together or not, share a popcorn bucket? What are we doing?
I don't know. I know the president is real tight with the owner of the Knicks, so I know they'll probably be together. Whether the mayor will be there with them, I don't know.
He was asked the other day about the price of this game.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I mean, the prices are ridiculous. Well, First of all, it's the New York Knicks.
Of course.
So right away, it's the biggest market in the country.
Right.
Second of all, they're like, oh, don't you think, why would you be going to an event with such large ticket price? It's like, what do you think? He controls that? He sets those prices?
No.
No.
Yeah.
And I love his explanation was something to the effect of like, well, if they stink, the ticket prices wouldn't be so high. They're a good team.
Yeah.
They're in the NBA Finals. Some of the criticism. We're going to get to some of the warranted criticism, but this is a little ridiculous.
It's a little over the top, yeah. Officials investigating the death of a 36-year-old inmate at the Women's Huron Valley Correctional Facility near Ypsilanti, the third unexpected death at the prison in less than a month. The Michigan Department of Corrections says Ashley Holth became ill Saturday, was taken to the prison's medical unit from the medical unit to a hospital, and she later died at Trinity Health Hospital. Officials say she was responsive when transported, and the cause of death has not yet been determined. MDOC says the case remains under investigation, and department leaders are now on site reviewing conditions and supporting staff and inmates. The death follows two others at the facility in May, both also under investigation, raising some renewed security and scrutiny from lawmakers who are calling for answers and stronger oversight at the prison. I mean, that's a little weird. You got three in a month.
Yeah, this is something Marie Osborne's been following pretty closely too for us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, three is,
I mean,
something doesn't seem right.
No, I mean, things happen. I get it, but when you got three in a month, that's a little much.
Did you see the Donald Trump Kristen Welker interview?
Oh my goodness!
On Meet the Press,
I did.
All right, well, here's the part that everybody's talking about because Donald Trump ended things pretty abruptly.
There's more evidence than ever presented.
Let's talk about
your elections in this country.
Court.
We're like a third world country. Your elections are crooked, and you're crooked, and Meet the Press is crooked, and so is ABC and CBS and CNN.
But, Mr. President,
you're one-sided crooked networks. All right, let's call it quits because I've had enough. Thank you, darling. Have a good time.
Mr. President, let's please. I traveled all the way to Wisconsin.
I've sat in the rain with you for an hour. On and off in the rain, and I've given you enough time. You ought to straighten out your press because you know what?
Mr. President,
a country can never be great with a dishonest press.
Listen, we traveled all the way to Wisconsin for this interview.
First of all, we traveled all the way to Wisconsin. Is crazy.
Right. I mean, he just keeps saying.
What is she coming by horse and buggy?
Right.
It took her 3 weeks to
Mars?
Get there. Right. What? You hopped on a plane and got to Wisconsin. I'm sure you took the PJ that NBC has.
Come on.
Okay. All right. But they were talking about the elections in California.
Yeah.
In that, this was an almost hour long interview. It was like 47, 48 minutes.
Yeah.
And so they covered a lot of ground. This is the part that everybody's talking about because Donald Trump talked it up. And they were talking about the elections in California and how things are taking so long. And Spencer Pratt was just passed by the councilwoman who was running for mayor as well. And it's going to be whoever the top two vote getters are going to run for in the general for mayor.
But they're
of
also talking about 2020, though, too, right?
This particular interview,
yes.
I mean, certainly you had shades of that as well.
Yeah.
But the topic that they were initially talking about
was California. Yes.
And it delved into this.
In 2020 and where's your...
And getting up and leaving and walking away and all those things.
Yeah. Where's your proof?
Here's where I think the difficulty is in interviewing Donald Trump these days. If you're a network news station, it's a no-win. You're backed into a corner because if you don't push back on Donald Trump and some of the claims that he makes,
the journalist is going to be like, what are you doing? Why are you even talking to this guy?
You don't look strong enough.
Right.
You don't look like you know what you're doing.
Right. Absolutely.
And if you push back, you risk this.
Mm-hmm.
The other option is, I guess you could just not interview him. But who wants that?
No, if you got a chance to interview the president, you want to take that. You want to interview the president.
Correct. So it feels like it's an impossible situation right now for any news outlet to interview Donald Trump because of something like this could possibly happen. And part of me just feels like Donald Trump felt like the interview was just, it was just going along. And then finally he was like, we need a moment.
Need to hype it up a little bit.
We need a viral moment. That's how it felt like to me. And we were talking to Kush Desai at the White House the other day, and they were talking about the aliens.gov and being a viral moment.
And
it feels like that's what this was.
Yes. And
it was a viral moment.
He kind of admitted that, too, you know.
Yeah, he did. He's like, how do we get in? How do we touch people? How do we get them engaged with these topics?
Yeah.
this is how we do it. We create a viral moment.
Uh-huh.
You pulled the okie doke on me. I didn't appreciate it because I want to know what's
going
on.
You wanted the real stuff.
I want the real UAP information.
Yeah, yeah.
And but that's what it feels like. It felt like this was a viral moment because this is not the first time we've heard the president say.
This is what everybody's talking about.
You know, you're all corrupt, and
they're not even talking about the rest of the interview he answered questions about Iran and the wars and all
correct.
Of that. Yeah, no.
It's the moment where he walks off. The yep. set, we've had enough. Taps her on the shoulder. Have a nice day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, interesting. Coming up next, we check in with Mike Lee. Lots of big stories in Crane's Detroit business. It's next on JR Morning. All right, welcome back. As always, at this time on a Monday, we catch up with our good friend Mike Lee, the managing editor at Crane's Detroit Business, brought to you by Mercantile Bank. Looking for a new business bank? Mercantile can help drive your business forward. Learn more at mercbank.com. Good morning to you, Mike Lee.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
We are well. It's good to have you back on again on a Monday morning. What's going on with the Buick City site up in Flint? There's maybe a new bit of life being breathed into that site.
Yeah, a little bit of intrigue circling around the Buick City site along 475 in Flint, former General Motors site, obviously. A company called Hillwood Sterling, which is one of the players in that, is Ross Perot Jr., the past. They have under contract about 200 acres at Buick City, and that company is not quite clear what they plan for it, but it's a company that has developed some major data centers in other areas. They have real credentials in that area. They built a metadata center in Fort Worth and others. Neither company is confirming what they're going to do with this, and they have not gone before the city council yet. Interestingly enough, the mayor, we caught up with the mayor who told us that about a week and a half ago that he hadn't heard, the first he'd heard of anything there, and he didn't know of any data center project. But very suddenly thereafter, the city council took up a moratorium on data centers, which they have not yet passed, but is still on the table to pause any data center development for 12 months. Obviously, this is a site that Flint would love to have redeveloped back into productive use. That's been kind of a emblematic of Flint's troubles after GM, I won't say abandoned the city, but shrunk its presence in the city. And there's been many ambitious development pitches there, EV battery plant, even an assembly plant that haven't come to fruition. So kind of a balancing act here of possibly getting this site redeveloped versus the kind of political radioactivity of a potential data center development. So this is one we'll keep watching going forward.
And Mike, speaking of data centers, how are the data centers affecting the state's two major utility heads from, meeting that clean energy mandate if affected by the state?
Yeah, it's an interesting time to be the CEO of an electric utility, to say the least. We had the two CEOs of DTE and Consumers Energy, Joy Harris and Garrick Rochow, at our power breakfast last week. And one of the more interesting threads there was, the utilities have this legally mandated clean energy target to have 100% clean energy by the year 2040. That is running into a couple of issues, one of which is the loss of some federal clean energy tax credits that are going away over the next several years that will make it tougher to get there, and also increasing demand from the data centers that we've been talking about, which do use a lot of power. Those are all complicating the drive to get there. Now, both of them say they're still, their companies are still committed and will be able to meet this mandate if they need to. But it's a matter of how much it will cost. Honestly, the federal renewable policy has changed dramatically under Trump. He's even, he's ordered one of the last coal plants in the state to stay open, which Mr. Rochow says costs ratepayers $15 million a month. He's looking to spread that pain around. They both say the data centers actually save regular customers money, spread the costs across a larger customer base. That's a tough sell right now, but we'll see how that changes changes going forward.
Meanwhile, Atwater Brewery's coming home.
Yeah, a hometown brand that got sold to a major drinks conglomerate is back under local ownership. The Mark Reith, the Detroit entrepreneur who started Atwater, has signed a deal to reacquire it. It had been owned most recently by Tilray Brands, which is a very large beverage manufacturer. Reith had sold the brewery to Molson Coors 6 years ago. Expected to close the deal to bring it back under local ownership this summer. He started the brewery in 2002. Prominently has a tap room and manufacturing down by the river on the east side of Detroit. Interestingly, he's acquired a few other business lines. One of which is Velvet Peanut Butter. Which is an old-time Detroit brand.
Yeah.
I picture the label. He has plans to bring manufacturing for that to Detroit. Believe it or not, in the complex by the river. So he's got a varied business interest. He said he wanted to buy back Atwater to preserve the brand. It has its footprint had shrunk under Tilray's ownership, and he really wanted to see it continue as you know, people are turning away from beer a little bit and the craft brewing craze has slowed down.
I feel like we need a mishmash of Atwater and Velvet. Yeah, it'd be pretty good. Mike Lee, always appreciate it. Good talking with you. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Coming up next, we know Michigan State's agricultural program is top notch. Well, they are working on something for FIFA. We'll tell you what it is next on JR Morning.
Paul W. Smith can be found on Focus from noon to 2 p.m. on 760 WJR. Now back to JR Morning with Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds.
Hello, is it me you're looking for?
Is it you?
Is it me you're looking for?
I didn't know I was looking for you.
Well, here's your chance to win a trip to see Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind, and Fire in the city.
That's going to be a show.
Of your choice. We've got flights, hotel, concert tickets, and premium VIP lounge access covered. It's your chance to sing along all night long with Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind, and Fire, prize provided by Live Nation. All you got to do is text this hour's national keyword, hello, to 95819. That's H-E-L-L-O to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. Play four times each day, weekday rather, for your chance to win. Official rules and more information at WJR.
See, if you would have sang that, I would have known what you were talking about. If you would have said, hello, is it me you're looking for?
Boy, nobody wants that on a Monday morning. Not one single person.
I would say any weekday morning.
No, that's not fair. That I don't appreciate. That's slanderous, and I don't appreciate that.
Okay.
Nobody wants to start their week like that. Everybody driving around this morning is like, thank you, Chris, thank you. It's a great public service that you did by not singing that.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about the FIFA World Cup. It's starting in just a couple of days. And there is an awesome connection between what we are going to see on television and what we do here in the state of Michigan.
Didn't I always say it's always a Michigan connection?
There is always a Michigan connection.
It is.
Always. And this connection comes way by East Lansing and Michigan State University. Because Dr. John Rogers, who's the professor of turf grass research, golf course renovations, and sports turf and golf turf management programs, also with the Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences at Michigan State University. He and his team are in charge of all of the pitches, Lloyd.
Wow.
The pitches.
Uh-huh.
Not the fields.
No, the pitches.
The pitches.
Yes.
For the FIFA World Cup, and Dr. John Roberts joins us. Professor, good morning. It's great to have you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Take us back a little bit, because I can't imagine that FIFA called you last week and said, hey, can you rile up some grass for us? What has this process looked like for you and your team?
Well, this probably started in 2019, and some would say it might have started in 1993-94, back with the Silver Dome.
Uh-huh.
But we've been going at this, and I will tell you first is that, you know, the University of Tennessee is a big partner in this, and it has a strong Michigan connection as well, because John Sorokin, who runs the Tennessee program, got his master's and PhD with me during this Silverdome project. And so when they contacted him and said, hey, we're going to need some help. We might have bit off more than we can chew in terms of all this, the size of this particular event. That's when he came back to me and he said, can we get the band back together? So I appreciated the
Wow.
Richie Earth, Wind & Fire thing. I'm kind of right there, you know.
Yeah.
Dr. Rogers, you know, most fans really never think about the field itself. How much can the quality of the grass impact the outcome of a match? I mean, could a poorly designed pitch actually affect the player's performance or increase the risk of injury?
Yeah. So these players are the best in the world, and their expectations are very high. But the main expectation that they have is that they can have confidence that wherever they place their foot, they're going to get the reaction that they want.
Mm-hmm.
Or whenever that ball hits the ground or rolls, it's going to react like they want. And so when it's something short of that, you know, it starts to cast doubt in their mind. Mm-hmm. And then that can affect performance, not ignoring any of the injury or the outcome or anything like that. So one of the things that's great about this, and you think about just Michigan State and their football field, there has never been a situation where the football field changed the outcome of a game. Mm-hmm. And in a turf manager's world, that's all they want. They don't want their field to be talked about.
Right.
They want the game to be talked about.
Right. Mm-hmm. How does a field that, you know, world-class soccer players play on and what you have in East Lansing at Spartan Stadium, are they different types of grass? Is it more compact? Like, what are the differences between maybe a soccer field and a football field?
Yeah, so that's a great question, because that is one that we probably need to, you know, talk about as much as we can. And, you know, a football field, it's the same grass, fellas. It's the same grass, and it's probably not far off from the same root zone, and it's almost the same, you know, the same preparation of how we were going to build one. The difference becomes the intensity. And if you're golfers, I can use this in that I spend more time preparing the greens than I do the fairways. We all think they look great, but I spend a lot more time on the greens, and that is because of the ball roll.
Mm.
On a football field or at Comerica, where Heather does just a great job, the ball roll does not mean very much. In soccer, it means everything. It means everything. And so in a football field, I always tell people, if the ball hits the ground, you're going to hear a whistle blow pretty quick.
Right.
So that's the big difference, is the reaction of the ball. And so that's why we spent so much time. That's why we spent so much effort. That's why FIFA got asked us to help them. Now, we haven't built these fields. These fields have been built by others. We've done the research that gave the sod farms the recipe. We did the research that gave the construction companies the recipe to what to build. And then we held them to these tight standards. That's been our job. So I'm even more proud of our job than, you know, physically building one.
Doctor,
I'm more proud of our scientists, because they worked under a tremendous amount of pressure, a time pressure, right? They're not going to move the start of the game. So you better have
right,
the
end. Right.
Doctor, is there a perfect soccer field, or are you constantly kind of balancing competing factors like, you know, climate and durability and, you know, the safety of the players?
Yeah, we haven't found that perfect field. You know, I'd like to think that we might break some ground, cool ground in this new soccer stadium we're going to build in downtown Detroit. Because mm-hmm. I'd like to see if we can't do something pretty cool down there. But no, we haven't built the perfect one yet. And, whether or not we ever will. And part of the reason is because grass dies if it's abused,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, if I put, you know, it's just a living thing. So if I just put, you know, 14 concerts on it in a week, it's not going to live. It's not going
right.
to live. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why we had that dirty word, artificial turf. But so we haven't really perfected that yet. So we've got some techniques and we've got some ideas, and this is, and the cool thing is, you know, this money from FIFA to help them solve this problem. Both Tennessee and Michigan State had the foresight to say, hey, now we got to take this and see if we can't push it to where it'll help all fields, and mainly including the high school fields. Mm. So, which is what we did last time in the Silverdome project. So very cool, very exciting. It's just disappointing that I'm 67 years old now, and I'm, you know, I don't know how much I have more left in me, but the future is really cool.
That's great.
Future sounds cool to me.
Well, it's important that we give you your flowers now, because
absolutely,
you're right. When the games, when those whistles go, we don't want to be thinking about the turf.
No.
So we want to talk about all the work that has gone into this for years.
Yes.
Now. And by the way, I have a 8-year-old and a 4-year-old at home. Our grass has been abused. So if you do have a little extra time and you do want to just come over and take a look, you have a standing invitation.
I appreciate that very much.
Dr. John Rogers, thanks so much for your time. Congratulations. And we can't wait to see these things in action.
Okay. You guys be careful.
Yeah,
all right.
You got
too.
It. Thank you, Doc. Appreciate
wow.
you.
Wow. Yeah. Great guy.
Coming up on the other side, we'll get you caught up on what's happening with that Toledo Festival shooting. Steve Dolan, the retired assistant DPD chief, joins us on the other side. It's Jer Morning. Well, an investigation is being done to the incredibly unfortunate shooting down in Toledo. 12 people wounded, a couple people in critical condition. And Toledo officials, as the investigation is ongoing, they're continuing to ask the public to provide more videos, more evidence to investigators that will help hopefully put the pieces together and identify these shooters who opened fire at the Old West End Festival that left 12 people injured. And Steve Dolan is the retired assistant DPD chief and joins us this morning to talk about it. Chief, good morning. It's good to have you back. Let's talk a little bit about, in the preliminary stages of an investigation like this, where you've got people hurt, seriously hurt, and you don't have a suspect in custody, what do these investigations look like at this point in time?
At this point, obviously, they're locked on the scene, and you talk to witnesses, both in the hospital and out, for anything they may have seen or thought they've seen or heard. It's my understanding they have cameras out there, at least portable cameras at the festival. You have the police out there already and on the scene for security. So you're trying to find out what's the motive. And it turns out, it's my understanding, that two individuals were shooting at each other, mm-hmm, and apparently missed each other and hit 12 other people. So you got to figure out what the hell caused this. Did anyone in social media know about this? Was this people knowing about it, or was it just two idiots that show up, had dissed one another, and shot each other? So you're starting from scratch, basically what they call gumshoe police,
uh-huh,
work.
Yeah.
Talking to, you know, witnesses, see what you got.
The festival had extra police officers, off-duty security, and mobile surveillance, yeah, cameras, yet this still happened. Have we reached a point, Deputy Chief, where every major public event has to be planned with the possibility, maybe, that gun violence might happen?
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, they closed down the Berkeley Festival. They closed down Orchard Lake St. Mary's Festival. And actually, when I got the notification of this shooting, I was working with security, I mean, parishioner at Cabrini, the Allen Park Festival.
Yeah.
And we had all these people from downriver, I mean, all the different communities, young, old, you know, teens, seniors, kids, and there wasn't a hint of any problems. Allen Park police were there. They're just walking around in a good mood, very positive public relations. There wasn't a hint of any problem. And all of a sudden this happens, and now my head's on swivel, like, okay, mm-hmm, could it happen? Because it was a beautiful day Saturday.
It's, yeah.
And so these people go to this festival in Toledo, and the police are walking around, and everyone's having a good time, and two clowns show up and ruin it for everybody. And they didn't get hit. That's the kicker. 12 innocent people get shot.
Right.
But not the two idiots that do it. And that's what really upsets you.
Yeah, I think the brazenness of it is what gets you.
Because, yeah,
like you mentioned, I mean, they had a huge police presence there.
Yeah.
As you would in any,
yeah,
event like this, right, nowadays.
Sure.
And they had officers in plain clothes,
sure, yep,
that were walking,
yep, yeah,
around as well. So to me, it's the brazenness of people,
yes,
that are going to take whatever beef that they have or whatever happened, and that's something,
yeah,
that they're still trying to figure out what the history is between these two gunmen, and that now bleeds over into a public space where you've got children walking around, for heaven's sake.
Okay, do you really need metal detectors at a church festival or at a community festival? I mean, what does society come to? And again, they're so brazen and they don't care. And the kicker is if they do catch them, they'll plead to a lesser charge and they'll be out on the street in no time at all. And that's the part that sickens me. These people have access to these guns, and I'm sure they're illegal handguns, and they're shooting in broad daylight. It boggles the mind. I mean, this wasn't, you know, an emotionally disturbed person like the thing at Penn Station where they stabbed
right.
five people.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. It's not like someone's driving a car into a festival that happened in Spain or into a synagogue or into a mosque.
Germany, yeah.
Those are emotionally disturbed people. These two idiots showed up with intent to kill somebody because you don't pull a gun unless you to wound somebody.
That's true.
You pull a gun to take their life. And instead, they shoot 12. And wasn't the youngest like 14?
14.
To get out there,
yep.
probably. Yep. Just, and a senior.
61.
My age.
Just the oldest.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they're just enjoying the music, the food, the fun, friends, and family. And then this happens. And it's never happened there before. And it's a long-standing festival, if it's my understanding.
Yes,
correct?
It is.
Long time, yes.
Yeah. And yet, Toledo police were ready. But, you know, years and years ago. You guys hear when they had the mass shooting at the fireworks?
Oh, well, yeah.
Hart
yeah.
Plaza?
Yes.
Okay. So I was working. I was the first one on the scene there. But just prior to that, we'd taken guns from three different people. And I'm thinking, we got this under control. We already got three guns. What could possibly happen? Mm-hmm. And then eight people get shot.
Yeah.
All because one idiot with a gun got in there. So even the best laid plans, like you said, the police have to be involved in everything. It's unfortunate, but... Unfortunately, now we have to call the police and say, hey, just so you know, we could use some police protection, just visibility.
But right. Steve Dahl, we appreciate your insight as always. It is sad. And hopefully we'll be able to talk to you soon about a positive event, but we appreciate your insight. Thank you.
Okay, you guys have a good one. Take
okay,
care.
You too, Chief.
And to his point, right, like, are you going to have security at every event? Lloyd, at this point, I want security at every event.
I want
event.
To.
I don't care
I
if
to.
It's a local city festival.
That's right.
Or something.
It's just the time we live in, man. I want it, you know, because people are.
I get it.
This kind of stuff happens.
Like
brazenly, like you said, in front of cops and everybody.
I used to be of the mindset of like, I don't want kids to have to walk through a metal detector going into school. I'll tell you what, my opinion has changed completely. I don't care.
Yeah, no.
It is the sign of the times.
The
it is unfortunate. We didn't grow up with it.
Nope.
But that doesn't matter.
It's going to make them safe.
It's how do we keep them safe?
That's it.
And the other part is like this old West End festival, it's not like they're raking in millions of dollars where they can probably afford to have a security company come in and bring in those metal detectors.
Exactly.
Right, but that needs to be able to happen. I don't
I
know if that's a goodwill gesture by these companies. I don't know what it needs to happen, but they need to find a way to be able to secure these events to some degree.
They have to.
Yeah, really scary situation. 7 o'clock hour coming up. Get you caught up on the headlines. ML Elric's going to join us in this hour. Jonathan Savage, a lot to do coming up.
It's another JR Morning with Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds on 760 WJR. And streaming on WJR.com, where Michigan comes to talk.
All right, 7 o'clock hour. Good to have you. Tigers with a big win yesterday. They beat the Seattle Mariners 5-4, thanks to Kevin McGonigal. Walked it off in the bottom of the ninth with two outs, two runs score on his single. He had a day. Kevin McGonigal had two hits, three RBI, one home run, and a walk. I mean, absolutely marvelous day for the young rookie. And they beat Seattle 5-4, win the series. They're now 27-39. So they still got some work to do to get back to 500. But the reality is playing much better baseball at this point.
And the Tigers got McGonigal at a bargain.
Yes, they well, I mean.
At this point.
Absolutely at this point.
At this point, yeah.
Also, Tarek Skubal made his start in West Michigan for the Whitecaps.
He do five innings.
Yeah, I mean, and
five no hit innings.
I think he gave up one hit.
One hit, okay.
His fastball touched 98 miles an hour. I mean,
hey.
Dude's an alien. If he's coming back from that type of procedure,
yes.
An elbow surgery, and he looks like he is well on pace to come back much earlier than they thought. So that's great news for the Tigers at this point. And again, whatever they decide to do with him,
mm-hmm.
we'll see. Whether that's something that they want to try to keep that piece and make a push towards the end of the year. I mean, they are better with him every 5 days.
Yeah.
or they decide to deal him and make you know, whatever that value is right now for him as high as possible. So we'll continue to see. I do want to just point out as well, Iran and Israel exchanged missile fire this weekend.
Yes, they did.
And this put Donald Trump's peace plan in real jeopardy.
Didn't the president say he was going to call or
he was
going to
call Benjamin Netanyahu and say, don't respond. None of the missiles that Iran fired connected.
Right.
And this is something that we've seen in the past where Iran has fired these missiles. They get taken out by the dome or missile defense systems by Israel. But there is always generally a response, and Israel did respond this time. And the president did say that he was urging them not to respond.
Not to respond. Yeah.
Because hopefully something bigger is in the works here. We don't have what that is yet.
No.
But it does complicate things once again.
I know in that interview yesterday, you know, Christine Welker asked the president, did he know where the Supreme Leader was? And he was like, well, I don't want to answer that, you know, but he's messed up as far as he's hurt or, you know, but he's in
he
it.
He said he's part of
the negotiations.
Yeah, they haven't spoken directly.
No, but he said he'd be willing to meet if he wanted to.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty interesting.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
A veteran Detroit police lieutenant is suing the city, claiming that she was punished for exposing massive overtime fraud. Now, according to a whistleblower lawsuit, Lieutenant Lori Pierce was suspended without pay in 2023 after revealing that 11 officers in the 3rd Precinct racked up more than $3 million in salary, boosted by 13,000 hours of overtime. Now, department officials later admitted under oath that the suspension was invalid and that supervisors routinely ignored major policy violations. Documents show some officers logged up to 19 hours of overtime a day, with one even tracking gym visits while on the clock. City's legal counsel has declined to comment ahead of the trial that starts next month.
Mm.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
That, you know, they could be using for something else, training or whatever they could use it for that's going to these salaries. You know, the Detroit police, before the former mayor left, gave the police department raises.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, you know, they're making the money commensurate to a lot of the other suburban agencies because a lot of our cops were going to the suburbs.
Right.
A lot of those cops came back to Detroit once the money got right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do stuff like this, it just makes it, I don't know.
It muddies the waters for sure.
It does.
Yeah, for
sure. It does, definitely.
Meanwhile, police in Toledo are looking at that shooting, and they're looking for the gunman in that case.
Yeah, they are. And authorities say at least two gunmen were likely shooting at each other when the gunfire erupted near that crowded festival, sending hundreds of attendees running for safety. Victims age and range from 14 to 61. Police say all 12 are in stable condition and are recovering now. Investigations and investigators are reviewing surveillance footage. They're asking festival goers to share any photos or videos that may help them to identify those that are responsible. And so far, nobody is in custody.
Mm.
And then you also had an event that took place, a bad event yesterday, in New York City at the Penn Station. It was a multiple stabbing, a major transit hub. It happened around 7 last night. First responders treated 6 victims, transporting 5 to area hospitals. They have injuries ranging from minor to serious. Amtrak police quickly apprehended the suspect. The investigation is underway, and that violence comes just before the game tonight between the New York Knicks and who are they playing again?
The Spurs.
What am I thinking? The Spurs and Knicks play tonight at Madison Square Garden, and the president is supposed to be there, and the mayor of New York. So they got to really make sure that the security is hyped up, which, you know, that was going to happen anyway. But now, because of this, you really want it to be hyped.
Yeah. The president was also asked about the ticket prices for this game. I mean, they are incredibly high. Thousands and thousands and thousands
of New York. It's the finals. I mean, come on.
And it's the Knicks. The Knicks have stunk for decades.
They haven't been to the finals, since? I can't remember.
I mean, forever.
Yes.
Forever and a day. And so the fact that they are showing some signs of life, they're in the NBA finals. I don't know why anybody's surprised that ticket prices are so high. It's supply and demand.
Yeah.
There's only
so many
seats.
They would be high here if the Pistons were playing.
Of course they would be. I don't know. They'd be
not as high as maybe New York, but they would be
$30,000 a ticket.
No, they'd be high. They'd be high.
Yeah, you're talking $5,000, $6,000, $7,000.
At least.
I mean, to get into the building, it's got to be expensive.
Yes.
For sure.
And that might be nosebleed, 5,000 to 7,000.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Coming up on the other side, I had a real pickle, real dilemma this weekend that I had to deal with. Okay. And I need your advice.
Okay.
Because I took action, but I was put in a tough spot. We'll talk about it coming up next. But first at 7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR. All right, so when I leave here most days, I go home, I do some work, we're talking about the show.
Yep.
And then at one point in the day, inevitably it turns to baseball.
Baseball, yeah.
Because I coach both Jake's Coach Pitt's team and Henry's T-ball team. I have 5 nights of baseball a week. It's a lot of... It's a lot of baseball.
It's a lot of baseball.
It's a lot of baseball.
Yeah.
But I will... I remind myself every day, at some point, they're not going to want me to do this.
You got to take advantage of
so
the
time. So I got to do it.
You got to take advantage
of
the time.
I got to do it.
Yes, sir.
It's a lot of fun, and the kids are great. Everybody's cool. Parents, everybody's awesome. Well, the season's almost over. And at the end of the year, for Jake's team, we do all-star selections. Okay. And then the league has a little all-star game with all the teams, all-stars, and we get together, and they paint up the field really nice. There's stars all over it. They get special jerseys. We give out another award for, like, a sportsmanship award.
Sure.
It's really, really cool what they do. And so I submitted our votes for all-stars. And
for your team?
For my team.
Okay.
And for my and what you do is all the kids vote on who they think their all-stars are, and the coaches get votes as well.
Okay.
And you tally them all up at the end, and the highest ones get the spots, right?
Okay. Is it so many on each team that can be an all-star?
There are so many on each team. Yeah. Well, okay. Our team, we have four this year.
But all four?
All four will be in the all-star
game.
Okay,
gotcha.
Yeah, okay. From our team.
Okay.
So the way the league works, their rule is if you can't make the all-star game, then you're not technically an all-star, right? We have to move to the next kid, whoever had the highest votes.
Okay.
That's who will represent us in the all-star game.
Yeah.
But your team voted for you, and that's great. And if you can't make it, and because, again, we're at the time of the year where school's just out, people are going on vacation.
And that's holidays, right? After the 4th of July,
because
the event is the 10th, right?
Yes, it's right after the 4th of July. So people are busy. I get it. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
So I submitted our votes because a couple of the kids who actually were voted All-Stars couldn't make it. So we moved down and had the other kids fill in.
Okay.
So I called all the parents this weekend, and I said, hey, are you able to make the game? Some said no. Some said yes.
Okay.
Based on all of those, I slotted our All-Stars in. Well, then I had a parent call in and said, hey, we actually can make the All-Star game now. If my son was selected by his teammates, we can make it. Well, this came after the deadline where I had to submit everything.
Okay, you had submitted everything already.
I had submitted everything. I had talked to all the parents who could be there,
okay,
and our All-Stars were set. Well, now this throws a bit of a monkey wrench into it, because now the kid who was going to be gone actually was voted an All-Star. So he had more votes than another kid.
Okay.
And so I had the dilemma of reaching out to the league and making a swap. A kid who didn't get as many votes for the kid who got enough votes to be an All-Star.
Okay.
And the dilemma that I had was, do I tell the parent, look, everything's settled. You guys said you couldn't be there, but we got to move on because I already settled everything. Submissions to the league are done. It's over. Or do I call the other parent whose kid got in because of attrition, essentially,
yes. Okay,
and say, hey, I'm really sorry. Another kid who wasn't going to be able to be there can be there now. They got enough votes. I gotta make the correction. I gotta swap it out.
Yeah.
What would you have done in that situation?
Well, to me, it depends.
Well, let me clarify.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me add one more piece to this.
Okay.
And Brian and Kelsey, I'd like your opinions as well. And you, 800-859-0957. None of the kids know.
Okay.
I told all the parents, nobody's addressing this. I will address it. I'm the head coach. We'll do this. I'll do it a special way after our game tonight.
Yeah.
So nobody knows except for the parents.
That makes it easier for me because then I would say the person who couldn't be there, the kid who couldn't be there, who can now be there, I would allow him to be there now only because the other kid doesn't know.
Right.
If the other kid knew that he was going to be an all-star and then you call back and say, hey, you're not an all-star now, that would be crushing to that little kid to me.
Right, right.
But if the kid doesn't know, then I think everything kind of works itself out, and then, you know, the other kid can be in.
Brian, where are you at on this?
100% with Lloyd. He's right. If the kids know, then you cannot make the switch because that's not right.
No.
But if only the parents know. Now, being the coach, you're probably going to get some grief from parents, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Hopefully not, but you never know.
Sure.
Yeah.
And understandably, if you call me and say, you know, if Lloyd calls me and goes, hey, man, your kids, they all started, it's great. And then 10 minutes later, Lloyd calls back and goes, by the way, what I told you before, ha, ha, ha. I'm going to go, dude, really?
Yeah.
Really? We're going to do that to me?
Yeah.
But as long as the kids don't know.
That's it to
no
me.
No harm, no foul.
That's it to
Kelsey?
Me.
Kelsey? Yeah.
I'd say the same thing. I mean, you got to protect the kids' feelings, you know, if they did know. But if they don't, no harm, no foul type of deal.
Yeah. 800-859-0957,
800-859-0WJR. I made the switch.
So you made the switch, and so
I made the switch. So I had to call one parent,
okay,
and say, "Look, I'm really sorry, feel really bad."
Mm-hmm.
And I asked first. I said, "Does he know? Did you tell him?"
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "No, I didn't tell him." I said, "Okay,
yeah."
Now here's my rationale for this decision. The texts are coming in. Rod in Plymouth, there are common law rules for a reason. It's not as though the kid, a Duggan reference in there.
Okay.
deadline passed. Names already submitted. No switch. I switched. And the reason I switched is because plans change. Things happen. Things fall through. Things don't.
It wasn't
plans.
The kid's fault that he couldn't be there.
It's not the kid's fault. It's not the kid. It's not like the kid had another event that they were choosing to be at over this one.
That's right.
Right?
Right.
It was
going by what the parents made plans.
Right,
and,
right.
You know.
And I made the switch because that kid got more votes. And if you can be there, he worked hard. He deserved to be. Not that the other kid didn't.
Yeah.
Not that there wasn't. All of our kids have improved. Thanks to the coaching. No. No. No, 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 no. But
yeah.
I made that decision because he earned it, and that was the right decision I thought I should make.
Well,
but I felt really bad. I told the mom, I'm like, I am so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I go, I feel really, really, and you know, you guys know me. I do feel bad.
Oh, I know you
oh,
do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I feel,
I
I'm crushed.
I know.
And as long as
family.
The mom who you had to change course on was okay.
Look, I
and
think she was
you know,
disappointed, and
well,
understandably so.
Sure. Yeah.
And
I think any parent would be.
And
yeah.
I get it. I would be bummed too.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't, I mean, all the kids voted. It was past deadline. I submitted it and all those things. But the league said, if you got to make a switch, you can make
you
a switch.
You do have a text here that says, they all know now that you've told all of Detroit.
I didn't say names.
No.
I don't tell what. I didn't say any of that. No, 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 no. No, no, no. But I feel
bad. The kids are in the car listening.
Really, I feel bad.
I wonder who it was.
I hope not. More coming up on JR Morning. Don't go anywhere.
On your ride home, check out the Mitch Albom Show at 4 p.m. Now to get your day started, here's JR Morning with Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds.
You know, Donald Trump only has one blemish on his record during these primaries in terms of who he's endorsed and who's won. And that came in the great state of Iowa for governor. His endorsee did not win. And as a result, Donald Trump's been labeled this kingmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what this shows is in the primaries, Donald Trump carries a lot of weight with his own party. Donald Trump still has cachet amongst Republican voters.
He does.
Whether you're a Republican and you like that, disagree, the numbers don't lie. And it does seem that there is an arms race here in the state of Michigan for Republicans running for governor that do want that vote. And that was the topic that ML Elric covered in his piece. And ML Elric, the On Guard government watchdog reporter for the Detroit Free Press, joins us this morning to talk about it. ML, good morning, my man. Good to have you.
Good morning. It's a good way to start the week with you boys.
It's good to
it's
have
good
you.
To have you.
So let's talk about this. It's obvious that GOP gubernatorial candidates want this endorsement.
Yes, this is a sort of thing where if you don't have it, you can't win. They all agree, even if they won't all cop to it. And the only reason they won't all cop to it is because nobody has it yet. And so they all want it. Now, whether they'll get it or not is another question.
And, you know, some people would argue that these Republican candidates aren't just running against each other. They're competing for the president's approval. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I think it's well, certainly they're competing against each other because one of them has to win. They have to get votes from people in Michigan. And as I wrote on Sunday, you know, the big vote is that guy's registered in Florida. That's
right.
The president. But if you are competing against these other guys, and then one of the other guys has President Trump's endorsement, then it's kind of over. So, yeah, you are competing for President Trump's endorsement. The only scenario where you don't have to compete for President Trump's endorsement if he decides not to endorse in Michigan, and that's an open question right now.
Well, and of course, you go back in history, and Donald Trump's candidates that he backed in primaries, even against incumbents, have not necessarily always come through on the winning side. So how does this change when we get to a general?
Well, this is something that Nixon said 50 years ago, is you kind of run to the left or the right in the primary to win over your own people. Then you run to the center in the general election to try and put together a majority. And you're absolutely right that President Trump's choices in 2022, Tudor Dixon, Matt DiPerno, and Christina Caramo got crushed in the general election. But if you don't get that nomination, if you don't win the primary, you don't get a chance to compete in the general election. So you really do have to make sure you get Trump on board if he's going to get into a race. And then you worry about what you're going to do next. And I think this is one of these things where candidates say, one race at a time. Let me win this one, and let me figure out how to win the next one. Mm. So it's, you know, they really, you know, the only way these candidates can survive without Trump's endorsement is if he doesn't endorse anybody. But as I wrote on Sunday, you can see that they're doing everything they can to make themselves look the most like Trump. So even if he doesn't endorse in the general election, somebody can say, look, if this guy says he's Trump Jr., if you didn't like Trump, you're not going to like them. So this is a tough call for these candidates.
Emil, what does this say about modern politics when one individual's approval can just overshadow the policy debates and qualifications and experience?
Well, it says that we have become very, very siloed, I guess. I wish I could come up with a better term, but that we're
kind of
packed into one little corner. Yeah, tribal, or I guess the other way I would look at it is we're kind of like chickens that are afraid. We're all huddled in one corner of the coop waiting to see whether someone's going to come in there and kill us or let us go. And that's kind of unfortunate because the only time you really don't see somebody work really hard to have the support of the leader of their party is if they think the leader of the party is toxic. And Trump's poll numbers have been very, very tough. But he's also proven this year that if he says no, you're dead. So,
yeah.
So we're gonna keep squawking in the corner of that coop.
I almost always look towards the former governor of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin's campaign. When he was running for governor of Virginia, and of course a purple state as well, he kind of kept Donald Trump at arm's length. He welcomed it in when it fit his policy path, but he never really actively, openly wanted the Trump endorsement. And again, at a little bit of a different time, that was around, you know, the 2020 election, things like that. So things were still a little hot, but he never actively, openly welcomed that endorsement with open arms. Is that, you think, the path in which some of these candidates should take?
Well, that's a great observation. The differences, I would say, between Virginia and Michigan is Virginia governors serve only one term.
Right.
So you just got to get in. And that's also a bluer state than Michigan. I think it's gone for the Democrats almost in every election for the last 20 years, whereas Michigan, you know, we decide where the nation goes. But I do think there is a path for someone to say, boy, all these guys, they want to be just like Trump. I'm going to be just like whoever's best for Michigan. No one has taken that lane. And I think the one candidate who may have been most likely to run like that was Tom Leonard, who was running right. in single digits and who dropped out and then endorsed John James, who's trying as hard or harder than anybody else to say, you know, I'm Trump Jr. So, you know, Michigan seems to be a state where we can't quite navigate that. But Youngkin was very, very adept. He said he kind of was the a la carte candidate. You like this Trump stuff? I'll do that. This right. stuff you don't like, I won't do that. It worked for him. But again, it's a little bluer state than we are. But these races are so close, it's just hard to say. And I don't remember if Youngkin had really a formidable opponent, whereas, you know, James is a congressman. Perry Johnson has all the money he could possibly want. Mike Cox is a former attorney general. And Eric Nesbitt is a very respected and well-liked leader in the legislature.
Yeah. And, you know, after all your reporting, ML, what do you think is the most important question that Michigan voters should be asking? Maybe that isn't getting enough attention right now.
Boy, that's a great question. Here's a question that I have for Michigan voters. So I'm going to flip it. I'm going to say,
okay.
When the hell are you people going to hold people responsible for their promises? We have all these candidates who go in there, they promise us stuff. Reporters show that they don't keep their promises, and we keep sending them back. Because until voters decide to make them stand up for what they said they believed in, they're going to keep running the same game on us over and over again, and nothing's going to change. The real contest is, which lies do we think voters like the most?
It does seem to be a trend here in the state of Michigan. Yeah, certainly. ML Elric, always appreciate catching up. Thanks for your time this morning. A great piece in the Free Press.
Yes.
We'll talk again soon.
Thanks. Check it out at freep.com.
Yeah, you
All right.
got it. That's,
See you, ML.
That's ML Elric. Meanwhile, coming up on the other side, Xi Jinping is headed to North Korea for a meeting with Kim Jong-un. What does that mean? What does it mean for the ongoing negotiations with Iran? We'll talk to Jonathan Savage on the other side. But first at 7:44, time for WJR's Eye on Engineering with Chris Klontz. All right, a little bit of breaking news before we bring in Jonathan Savage. Iran's top military command central headquarters says that it will stop striking Israel in these military strikes, but they say that it will carry out a more severe response if Israel continues striking southern Lebanon. And of course, there was a ceasefire put into place,
yes,
really on two separate occasions between Israel and Lebanon,
right,
which is essentially gone by the wayside at this point. Donald Trump had at one point said that he was telling Benjamin Netanyahu
like
to stop.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Let's halt this.
Yes.
Because there are still active negotiations going on to try to bring all of this to an end. Jonathan Savage, our Fox News reporter, WJR contributor, joins us to talk about that. Also, President Xi Jinping's trip to North Korea to meet with Kim Jong-un. Jonathan, good morning. It's good to have you back.
Hello. Good morning. Nice to talk to you again.
What does that statement by the Iranian officials mean towards the negotiations that are ongoing right now?
I think it's interesting. As we know, Iran sees the ceasefire in Lebanon as part of the ceasefire with the United States and Israel on the whole. Now, well, you were talking about that, the Israel-Lebanon ceasefire situation, which was really a ceasefire on paper as much as anything else.
Right,
Israel
yeah.
was continuing to attack Hezbollah in the south of Lebanon. That seemed to be tolerated somewhat. But it was when Israel attacked Hezbollah positions in the densely populated capital of Lebanon, Beirut, against the request of President Trump, that things took a turn. That's when Iran decided to start firing barrages of missiles at Israel. Israel responded with multiple strikes of their own over the last day or so. Things really seem to be getting somewhat out of hand. Iran now says it will cease its armed forces operations, but as you said there, they say that they'll respond with more severe attacks if the attacks continue, including in southern Lebanon, not just against Beirut. Mm.
Jonathan, and I thought we had, and I guess we have significantly depleted Iran's capabilities as far as launching attacks and those things. It doesn't seem like, you know, we have completely, because they're still launching attacks and still able to fire missiles.
Yeah, it had emerged over time that Iran still had some fairly significant missile and certainly drone launching capabilities. They were able to maintain a grip over the Strait of Hormuz with what they had. And they had enough to fire multiple strikes against Israel over the last 24 hours. So they had access to missiles and perhaps even been able to restock to an extent as well. Israel says that over the last day, they have been targeting Iranian air defense, which Iran had been trying to replenish. The air defenses were among the first things to be targeted in Operation Epic Fury.
So what does this Xi Kim meeting mean for the United States, mean for these negotiations that are ongoing?
Yeah, in terms of the Xi Jinping Kim meeting, for a long time, China was North Korea's biggest backer, an advisor and benefactor. In recent years, Russia has moved in on that. And Xi Jinping, according to analysts, wants to try and reassert Chinese control there. For the United States, for President Trump, he has for quite some time said he'd like to have more negotiations with Kim Jong-un. The North Korean leader doesn't seem particularly interested in that. It could be that Beijing could act as an interlocutor, as a mediator between the two countries and get things going once again. Or it could be that Beijing and Xi Jinping acts to further protect the North Koreans. Certainly, Xi Jinping would like to have a very strong relationship with Pyongyang to maintain stability on his border.
And North Korea has historically balanced its relationships with both China and Russia. Is Kim trying to kind of play both sides to maximize what he can get from each of them?
Perhaps, because we know that Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin have a very strong alliance as well, one that is rooted in practicality rather than perhaps a sort of great love for each other's country. They've both found ways to enhance the relationship as a result of the war in Ukraine with Chinese money coming into Russia and cheap Russian energy going the other way. And the two countries talk about a multipolar world. They're two countries, as North Korea is, which are very keen to not see American dominance in their territory, in their part of the globe.
Well, and these are all adversaries of the United States. Right. All of these countries that are working together, you mentioned jockeying for who's leading the pack to a certain degree, but China, North Korea, Russia, Iran, all of these countries are adversaries and working to, you know, in collaborative efforts in some instances against the United States.
They are. And if you look at what Xi Jinping wrote in North Korea's state newspaper in a letter to mark his trip, he said the two countries are at a new historical starting point. And he said that China and North Korea should oppose hegemony, authoritarianism, and before you choke on your cereal, and attempts to revive militarism that threaten regional security. Mm. And those phrases are going to be understood as references to the United States and its allies.
You know, sometimes what leaders don't say, Jonathan, is just as important as what they do say. What will you be kind of watching for mostly during this visit?
The nuclear issue, probably. Kim Jong-un has said that he would like to exponentially increase his country's nuclear arsenal, and it's thought that their nuclear warheads have gone up by about 20% in just the last year alone, and he unveiled a new facility producing nuclear materials. So North Korea absolutely committed to being a nuclear-armed state. Traditionally and officially, China supports a nuclear-free Korean peninsula, but Beijing hasn't really been talking much about denuclearizing the Korean peninsula recently. So if that continues, if Xi Jinping continues to avoid the nuclear question, you are seeing him prioritizing stability, prioritizing his relationship with North Korea over denuclearization.
Does Taiwan also factor into these negotiations, these talks?
I don't think it does necessarily, other than we've got this situation where China doesn't like the United States being involved in the Taiwan question, mm-hmm. doesn't like any kind of unclear answer from the U.S. on Taiwan. We know the U.S. doesn't have official relationship with the Taiwanese government, officially respects the one China policy, but North Korea and China could come together diplomatically to assert their joint opposition to the United States involvement in the Indo-Pacific.
Mm. Jonathan Savage, always great reporting. Thank you for your time, as always. We'll talk again very soon, my friend.
Thank you. Take
care.
Yeah,
you got it. It's interesting. Look, it's not unusual that these leaders are meeting.
No.
Right?
No.
That on its face shouldn't spook the United States. It shouldn't raise any red flags.
But I think in the times we are in
Correct.
Right now makes it stand out a little more.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Coming up on the other side, 8 o'clock hour. Coming up, we'll get you caught up on the headlines. Also, Nolan Finley with an interesting piece on Social Security in the Detroit News. Jamie rejoins the show. We're going to talk about her latest episode of the podcast. And, of course, it's Monday Munchies. We'll get you caught up on some of the restaurants that you just got to dine at here in Detroit, the Metro Detroit area. All that coming up in the 8 o'clock hour here on JR Morning. We'll see you on the other side.
It's not just morning. It's a JR Morning with Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds on 760 WJR and on the WJR app, where Michigan comes to talk.
All right, 8 o'clock hour here on a Monday. It's good to have you. Want to get you a little bit of news that's breaking this morning. Iran saying that the current attacks that have come back and forth between Iran and Israel are over, at least at this point. Iran's top military command announcing the end, saying that if Israel attacks continue, including in southern Lebanon, Iran will respond with more severe and forceful attacks than before. They're also lumping the United States into that as well. Iran's foreign ministry saying that the U.S. bears responsibility for aggression from Israel and that consequences of escalating tensions will also be on the United States. So after Israel, the attacks that were happening in southern Lebanon against Hezbollah targets, they launched a military action in Beirut.
Mm-hmm.
That was the catalyst for Iran responding then against Israel. They were targeting a gas facility in Israel, in northern Israel. And again, at this point, everybody says they're backing off a little bit because these negotiations are actively ongoing still.
Still, yeah.
And the truce between Israel and Lebanon, which has happened really twice now, again, seems to be that also hanging by a single thread at this point. But if things are cooling down, that's a good thing. The president is signaling that he wants Benjamin Netanyahu to stop. Also, the president telling Fox News this morning, and I'm sorry, I just lost it. Let me bring it up really quick.
Okay.
The president saying this morning to Fox News, what I would suggest to Iran, you shot your missiles. That's enough. Get back to the table and make a deal. So the president still focused on making a deal at this hour. After hopefully some of the military action is cooling at this point.
And he talked about, too, in an interview yesterday on Meet the Press, how, you know, it's been about 3 months that he's been dealing with this, where, you know, in the past it's taken years to come to some type of, you know, closure. And he's, you know, hoping to get this deal done fairly quickly. But 3 months, you know, compared to years, he says he thinks that's a
year-long effort to get the JCPOA in
place. That's right.
The Obama administration. Again, it's a different set of circumstances. There weren't military actions surrounding those negotiations. And I think there were faulty elements of that deal.
Sure.
And the president talked a little bit about that yesterday. But again, different set of circumstances. You're right. I think it's important to bring that up because it's not like negotiating with Iran is just flipping a switch.
Yeah, right.
So it is something that you need to keep in mind. Also, you did mention a little bit about that interview yesterday that the president had with Kristen Welker. There was some fireworks at the end. Here's what came of the conversations about the elections that are unfolding and still being counted in California.
There's more evidence than ever presented.
Let's talk
your
about
your elections in this country.
Court.
We're like a third world country. Your elections are crooked, and you're crooked, and Meet the Press is crooked, and so is ABC and CBS and CNN.
But Mr. President,
your one-sided crooked networks. All right, let's call it quits because I've had enough. Thank you, darling. Have a good time.
Mr. President, let's please. I traveled all the way to Wisconsin.
I've sat in the rain. On and off in the rain, and I've given you enough time. You ought to straighten out your press because you know what?
Mr. President,
a country can never be great with a dishonest press.
Listen, we traveled all the way to Wisconsin for this interview.
And that's how the interview ended on Meet the Press yesterday with Kristen Welker. That's the flashpoint.
And that's what everybody remembers.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he answered a lot of other.
Yeah, the interview's almost 50 minutes long.
Sure.
Yeah. But, you know, I personally, that's not my thing. It's not the first time the president's walked out on an interview before.
And it's not going to be the last
time. Did it with Leslie Stahl on CBS.
Yes.
I mean, he's done it multiple times.
Sure.
So you're right. It won't be the last time. But that's what everybody's talking about today. I don't appreciate that. I mean, it sounds like it was an extensive interview. They got a lot of questions
definitely
in and out
did.
Of that. So
yes.
I don't fault the president for saying, look, we've done enough here. But also the optics of walking out on something like that. That's just not my style. I don't appreciate that.
The police in Toledo, Ohio, they're still searching for those suspects in that shooting near the popular Old West End Festival left 12 people wounded on Saturday. Authorities say at least two gunmen likely shooting at each other when gunfire erupted near the crowded festival, sending hundreds of attendees running for safety. Victims who were shot range in age from 14 to 61. And police say that all 12 are now in stable condition and they are recovering. Investigators are also reviewing surveillance tapes and asking festival goers to share photos and videos that may help them identify those responsible. This festival, I mean, it's something that's been going on for years and years and years. And now you have two people that it seemed like they were beefing, deciding to shoot at each other, but ended up hitting some innocent people. Mm. And that's on top of what happened at New York's Penn Station last night. New York City Fire Department saying emergency crews responded to the major transit hub about 7. Festival responders treated 6 victims, transporting 5 to area hospitals. This was a mass stabbing. A bunch of people were stabbed. And the injuries range from minor to serious. Amtrak police, they arrested the suspect, and the investigation is underway. And as you know, the Spurs and Knicks play tonight in New York. The Penn Station sits right above Madison Square.
Right below Madison Square.
The president's supposed to show up tonight. Mm-hmm. The mayor is going to be there. So you know security was already going to be tight, but sure. Now it's going to be even better. And they were talking about having, I guess, like a watch party.
Mm-hmm.
That's been canceled.
Yeah, it's been canceled.
That's done.
Yeah, a scary situation there, certainly. And what is going on in the women's prison here in the state of Michigan, too? Because we have a third death now.
We do, and officials are investigating the death of a 36-year-old inmate at the Women's Huron Correctional Facility near Ypsilanti. The Michigan Department of Corrections says Ashley Holt became ill on Saturday. She was taken from the prison's medical unit to a hospital, and then she later died at Trinity Health Hospital. Officials say she was responsive when she was transported. The cause of her death has not yet been determined. MDOC says the case remains under investigation, and department leaders are now on site reviewing conditions and supporting staff and inmates. But when you have 3 inmates die within a month, something's a little weird. It has a little smell to it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like this is a little different, only because there was some sort of, I mean, obviously
she was ill.
Ill enough to have to go to the hospital.
But was, you know, responsive.
Responsive.
And then later died. I mean, I don't know. But we'll find out. It'll come out. But it's just a little more than coincidental that you got 3 in a month.
Yeah, interesting. Meanwhile, good weekend for the Tigers. They were able to win that series against the Seattle Mariners. They did lose Saturday 4-0, but yesterday came through with a 5-4 win over the Mariners, and it was Kevin McGonigal, the hero, once again.
It's amazing.
A walk-off hit in the bottom of the 9th with 2 outs, drove in 2 runs, and the Tigers win the game. Kevin McGonigal, his stat line yesterday, unbelievable. 2 hits, 3 RBI, a home run, a walk, and just 1 strikeout. He's batting .291 on the year, and one of, for certain, the more reliable, consistent players on this roster at this point.
Absolutely. And the Tigers got him for a nice little price.
Yeah, they locked him up. He's making more than your average rookie.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, the way that these teams look at, signing a player, you want to get in on him early.
Definitely.
Because if you're able to re-sign at a, you know, it, like they did this year, the market's just going to go up. So by the time his rookie deal's over, you're going to be paying him a boatload more money.
Sure.
We've seen that with the Lions. They've done that.
Yes.
They've re-signed guys earlier so that when the market does go up and their contracts are up, they're actually getting a deal.
Absolutely.
Essentially.
Oh, that's
so
what you do.
It is smart. Coming up on the other side, if you're counting on Social Security, Nolan Finley says not to. We'll talk about it. It's JR Morning. Well, there has been a lot of talk about Social Security over the last, for sure, 5-ish years.
At least.
I mean, it probably goes back even a little further. But remember, Joe Biden in one of his State of the Unions was trying to rope Republicans into saying that they were going to cut Social Security.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, you're going to keep it? You're going to keep it? And they're like, yeah, we're going to keep it. We don't want to get rid of Social Security.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That would be a disaster.
Of
and he's
course.
Like, all right, I gotcha. You said it. And we're like,
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. I mean, look, money being spent and a lot. That's fine. You can't have people that are retired, elderly people, all of a sudden not have money.
Oh, absolutely. After they put into it all their life.
Right.
Yeah.
Problem is a report released by the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget projects Social Security will be insolvent by 2032. Again, I ain't a mathematician, but that sounds like it's about 6 years away.
6 years away.
And it would be cutting those monthly checks received by 63 million Americans, 24%. That's about $520. It's a lot of money.
Absolutely.
That all of a sudden you don't have in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
That you worked all your life to build that up.
That's right.
And Nolan Findlay wrote an interesting piece about it because it hasn't been a major topic yet for those running for state government, for federal offices here in the state of Michigan, but it probably should be. And Nolan Findlay joins us this morning to talk about it. Nolan, good morning. It's good to have you.
Good morning, guys.
Why do you think these candidates have stayed away from this topic thus far?
Because what we've done is fear-monger instead of fix. We've known this day is coming, and it's right on us now. And the senators we elect this year, 6 years from now, will be finishing up their term, and it will be up to them to come up with solutions. And yet they won't put any solutions on the table because we've got to do some very hard things to save Social Security. And if you talk about doing hard things, what happens is what you just mentioned. It becomes politicized and people accuse you of wanting to kill Social Security. We don't need to kill Social Security, but we do need to fix it.
Nolan, your column suggests that Michigan would be hit harder than many other states. Why is Michigan particularly vulnerable?
Well, income's lower here than they are in the national average, so any hit to revenue streams hits harder here. Older population here, so more people affected. I think it was right around 20% of our population will be affected. It's a huge, huge, it'll be a huge, huge deduction to our gross product, gross economic output here in Michigan once those cuts take place. And they'll have to take place.
Mm. What does that signal to younger workers? I mean, you know, I'm decades away from drawing Social Security, and I know it's a topic amongst my friends and people of my age. It's like, well, what is that going to look like in 30 years down the road?
Well, yeah, I mean, it should be bad as hell.
Yeah.
Because you know, you've been paying in like everybody else, and you should be able to take out like everyone else. But again, if the money's not there, you can't draw on it. And so, you know, there's still time to put solutions in place, obviously, but the longer you wait, the harsher those solutions are going to be.
You know, one of the most striking points, Nolan, in your piece is that Washington has known about this issue for about 40 years. How do we get to the point where a known crisis still remains unresolved?
Well, just as you were talking, you know, when Republicans tried to put answers on the table, tried to put together a commission to fix this. What did Joe Biden do? And Democrats accused them of wanting to do away with Social Security. So it's been that rail you can't touch in American politics. And so instead of doing the things we needed to do, we just kicked the can down the road, and now the road's coming to an end.
And so the biggest problem that I have with these funds, mm-hmm. is that they're borrowing. Social Security is borrowing money to help pay for now. Well, that doesn't help us in the long run. And I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, Nolan. I'm not sure that the federal government has shown a propensity to properly spend our money.
No, I mean, we've got a huge national debt growing. And what we've done over the years is taken the money that was in the Social Security Trust Fund and we've borrowed it to finance today's spending, again, to keep from making hard decisions, to keep from making tough budget choices. We've just been drawing money out of the Social Security Trust Fund and putting an IOU in there. Well, there's no money in the federal government. You can't pay off that IOU. And so not just Social Security we're ignoring. It's It's the Medicare obligation we're ignoring. It's the national debt. Someday that's going to have to be paid.
And Nolan, you know, the options to me seem straightforward. You raise taxes, you reduce benefits, you increase the retirement age, or you find some new funding. Why has it been so hard to build a consensus around any of those solutions?
Because they all require sacrifice, and we don't sacrifice here. You know, you could, given the demographics have changed so dramatically over the last 50 years or 90 years since Social Security was put in place, people are living a lot longer. You could raise the benefit age and take care of a lot of this, or you could ask people to put more in now. But asking people to put more in now should come with a promise that we're not going to blow that money. Mm-hmm. You put the money in and it'll stay in the trust fund. Mm. And we've been unwilling to do that.
Yeah, it's a major, major problem. Nolan Finley, we appreciate you writing about it, and hopefully we get more information from our candidates running for U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
It would be nice to know what their solutions might be to this. Nolan, we appreciate you as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. That's Nolan Finley at the Detroit News. Again, I think the idea, Social Security was created, it was spawned by the Great Depression.
By the Great Depression, yes.
So you had people living in absolute squalor and poverty. And there was no way or no... I mean, at least in hindsight, there was no end in sight for them, right? Mm-hmm. They're in the throes of it.
Mm-hmm.
So when this was brought about in the mid-30s, it was a safety net for people.
Sure.
Which makes a lot of sense. You cannot afford as a country to have your most vulnerable population, which is elderly folks at the end of their life, when they are no longer able to work,
right,
all of a sudden have nothing. There's no income stream. I totally support, sure, Social Security. I totally understand it. My brain works. I don't trust you with my money.
And that's why I work a lot of people.
So you're going out. You're going to work this morning. You burned your tongue on your coffee. It's too hot. And then when you got to make that tax payment out of your check, it's going to Social Security. Now you're telling me that in 10 years when I got to start pulling it out, it's not going to be
it's not going to be there. No,
that's really a problem for me. So having the government in control of my money that I work for is something that doesn't jive with me. But at the same time, you can't rely on people to be savvy enough. And it's not an indictment on people, but not everybody is a financial guru.
No.
Right? So you have to be able to provide that safety net. It's a real, real problem here in this country. And certainly for people here in Michigan as our population grows older. Yeah, it's a problem. Coming up on the other side, Jamie rejoins the show. We're going to get an update on her, how she's doing. Also talk about her new episode of her podcast. And it's going to be nice to talk with Jamie here on a Monday. So stay tuned. More coming up on JR Morning.
Stick around for All Talk at 9 with Kevin Dietz. Then Focus with Paul W. Smith at noon on 760 WJR and on the WJR app. Now it's JR Morning. Here's Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds.
That's right. Jamie Edmonds.
It's one of our favorite parts of the week because we get to reconnect with Jamie. Hi, Jamie. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you?
All right. Please don't storm away from this interview. Please don't get up and walk away. We'd appreciate it if you stayed the whole time.
Yes.
I would. I wouldn't do that.
Okay, good.
You traveled a long way to get here.
That's right. That's right. How are you? How are you feeling? What's going on with you?
Oh, well, I started that bigger, scarier drug that I was talking to you guys about, and it's definitely bigger.
Yeah.
I'm managing. I mean, there's some bone pain and stuff, so I can't do what I used to be doing, but it's okay. I have to think of it, this thing is on my team. It's trying to help me get through this. So that's how I'm thinking of it.
That's a great way to think about
it. Yeah. I mean, and when I saw your message on Instagram about what the doctor had said when you went in and they talked about your mammogram and all that, how things have shrunk and things, I just felt so good, Jamie, that treatment is working for you.
Yes. Lloyd sent me the sweetest text after he saw that. I put it out there, which is not usually my MO, but I've been getting so many messages from people saying we are enjoying watching your story because we're going through it too.
Yeah.
So when I got good news, I thought, okay, let's share it. And what I found out was the first round, those 12 weekly treatments of that other drug did shrink all of the things. And
That's
I was
great.
Just very happy and cried a little bit. And Lloyd texted me.
That's it.
And so now with this heavier drug, are you on the same regimen that you were before, once a week, and it's or is it spaced out a bit?
This one is every other week.
Okay.
And so I've done one. I've got three more to go, but who's counting?
And I know the doctor had said, you know, for you to take a walk and get you some ice cream. Did you go do that? Did you follow doctor's orders?
Of course I did. Okay. Of course I did. Yeah, I mean, they said, this is good news. You need to celebrate. Enjoy the day. Go get some ice cream. And I did. I love vanilla ice cream with Oreo crumbles on top, or I like a shiver with Oreo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can't go wrong either one.
I mean, that has to be, if there is one piece of advice that doctors give that will be followed 100% of the time, if they say go for a walk and get ice cream, every single person will do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Also, the latest episode, of your podcast with Gilda's Way was absolutely fantastic, too.
Thank you. Yeah, the latest episode that dropped last Thursday was with Gilda's Place. And if you don't know the story, Gilda Radner, the famous comedian, actress, she had ovarian cancer, and she was just looking for a place when she was going through it way back when. And then it's ballooned into all across the country. There are these Gilda's clubs. And I went there and I just talked about all of the things with the leaders there that they offer. And it's unbelievable. They sort of meet the people where they are. So if you want a big support group, they have that. If you want one-on-one, they have that. If you want yoga or art classes, or you just want to bring your kids to Noogie Land, they called it, which is in the basement, you can do that. So it's very valuable, and I hope people took that away.
And, you know, Jamie, one thing many cancer survivors talk about is just the importance of community. How critical has that been in your journey?
Well, that's why I started the podcast in the first place, because I had gotten comfort from other people talking about it. So I thought if I talk about it, maybe I could pay it forward. And so far, that's the reactions I've been getting. And so hopefully people are getting something out of it. I know I am. It's giving me a project. It's giving me a purpose. And I really appreciate WJR for giving me the platform.
Well, and, you know, I think I talked about this on Friday and I didn't want to speak for you, but I think it was right, which was you have a great support system. Right. And you have a wonderful family. You have wonderful friends that are all in your corner that are constantly checking on you. But the interview that I thought with Gilda's Place, which was so important, is some may not have that type of support system. Right. They may not have that type of family or those friends nearby where it's easy for them to be there for somebody going with what you're going through. So having that outlet, I thought was really important to highlight. And it came across that way, I thought.
Yeah, I thought that too. It's also like housed in a house in Royal Oak. It feels very homey when you're in there. And the social worker I talked with on that podcast also was saying, like, when you have someone who understands you and understands what you're going through, that can just unlock a lot of things. Because even my husband said it on the podcast a few times ago. He was like, I am here for you, but I don't understand what you're going through, because he's not going through it. And so you get that when you have this community at Gilda's.
Also, Jamie, you're going to be on Local 4 tonight, 5:45, I think, with Jason Colthorpe.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is antithetical to what I usually do, which is I don't want to be the subject, but Local 4 had reached out. Jason is my friend for 20 years now, and I said, if I'm going to do it, I want my friend to do the interviewing. Mm-hmm. So he came over to my house, and I don't know what he put together. I joked with him. I'm like, do you want me to write this for you? But... You know, we cried and we laughed, and Olivia's going to make the TV today at 5:45, and then I think he's going to do something Tuesday morning, too.
Okay, great.
Cool. Yeah. You were also on the Motherload podcast on WJR with Marie Osborne.
I'm everywhere, guys.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, and that was another great conversation.
Yeah, they asked me to be on the Motherload just talking about, you know, what they always talk about, which is you're a mother and... You know, you do all the things. Mm-hmm. And so they had me on. They're like, you know, you're going through something, you know, life-threatening, terrible right now, and you're still a mom. So those are the conversations we had. And they both were so sweet, asking just the perfect questions moms would ask.
And let me tell you, you know, I got to ask you this, because I know what the outcome is going to be. You're going to be fine, because the Lord has already told me what the deal is.
Your lips, Lloyd, I'm just saying, God's ears.
He's already told me. What are you looking forward to the most when this is all behind you, Jamie?
That's a good question, Lloyd. And I've been reading a lot about this and through the community of people who've been through this. Like, sometimes it takes a long time to get to the other side. Even if you ring the bell and even if you have the surgery, you're not the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe accepting that I'm not as carefree as I once was. Like, I think about mortality and how fragile life is more now.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm just going to be a little different. And I don't know what the other side looks like quite yet.
Okay. Mm. All right. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Can we ask you about Dylan Larkin? What is going on there?
I was looking up all the things. I was like, what are they going to ask me? Either Tarek Skubal trade or Dylan Larkin.
That was going to be next. So you're on the money.
Yep.
Something is going on there in that clubhouse where Dylan Larkin doesn't feel like he can win here and he has to leave. And it's like, is it a rift with Steve Yzerman? Is it chemistry within that locker room? Did he taste something at the Olympics that he loved? And he sees that it's just so far away here. I think it could be a mix of all three.
I believe
that. Or is he forcing Steve Yzerman's hand to do something, to go out and acquire some more talent?
Some more talent.
Yeah, I don't know.
And maybe, but I think he's like really going to leave.
Yeah, that's the impression I get as well. And then Tarek Skubal might be coming back much earlier than we all expected.
Yeah, doing good.
Shocker that he sold out that Grand Rapids when he went to pitch on Sunday.
The line to get in was like 2 hours long. Like it was people were there ready to see Skubal. It's a pretty crazy time. So I think it's a wild time.
Can I jump in real quick?
Sure.
Jamie.
Yeah.
We'd like to know. This is just my personal question. There's no pressure. When are you coming back?
Do you need a female perspective in there, Brian?
I hate to say, I love Lloyd and Chris, but I miss you.
We all do.
And I really
so
like
much.
You to come back.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate all your support, talking about the podcast all the time. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I had ice cream in your honor this week.
Well, it has to be vanilla with Oreos, Brian.
I had a ice cream sandwich. Does that count? That's sort of like
yes,
a
it does.
That's okay. Pretty close.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, good job, Brian.
Brian took your doctor's order. See how that see how that works?
Doctor's a doctor.
That's pretty good.
That's it.
You're exactly right. Jamie, we love you.
Love you.
We'll talk again soon.
See you, Jamie Jane.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's Jamie Edmonds. More coming up. Monday Munchies on the horizon. Big Rock Italian Chop House. We're talking about it. It's your morning. Well, it's a Monday, which means it's time for Monday Munchies. And today we look at Big Rock Italian Chop House. And I mean, if you could taste pictures through a computer, you can taste it. Because in Birmingham, they are a must-attend destination. And Chris Mayer is the executive chef of Big Rock Italian Chop House and joins us this morning. Chris, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Let's talk a little bit about what you guys do there, because, you know, there's the old adage, like, you know, a little bit about something, but not a lot about everything. I don't think that applies to you guys. You guys are experts in a lot of different areas.
We are. We focus on fine Italian cooking and everything made from scratch. And then the other side of that is just phenomenal steaks and chops and everything done with just simply salt and pepper and finished with a little bit of herbed garlic butter.
Mm.
When someone walks through the doors for the very first time, Chris, what do you hope they immediately feel?
Comfort. You know, there is a vibe in the restaurant for sure that has some luxe to it, but we definitely want you to come in and feel comfort.
Tell us a little bit about your history. You're the executive chef there.
I am.
What's your career look like?
Better part of my career has been spent with Cameron Mitchell Restaurants, so the owners of my company. I spent the last 13 years before opening Big Rock at Ocean Prime in Troy. And then before that, I worked with them for Mitchell's Fish Market. And then I did a little bit of jumping around. I worked at a place called Courthouse Grill in downtown Plymouth, which was actually Ernesto's prior to that. So that's where the majority of my Italian cooking came from. And that's really it. I mean, 13 years at Ocean Prime before I came here is a good bulk of it.
No doubt.
And, you know, every great restaurant, Chris, has its signature dishes. Talk about some of the menu items that, you know, if I'm a first-time guest, that I absolutely have to try.
Well, we actually talked about it a little bit before we got on air, is our king crab in a jar. It's one where we do all the work for you. We take all the crab out of the shell for you delicately so it stays in nice lumps. And then poach that down in a bay leaf clarified butter, served with some crostinis. That's definitely a must try. And excuse me. Mm-hmm. And then my favorite pasta on our menu is our carbonara bucatini.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at arancini's. I'm Italian, so you're this is my love language here. You're speaking it. What goes into creating a menu like this?
That's years.
Yeah,
I bet.
There's a lot of planning and development. You know, testing over and over on whether or not a recipe is right. Testing it and serving to multiple different people so you get multiple different palates with not only menu design but plate design. A lot of recipe writing and rewriting and rewriting and rough drafts and multiple different heads. A lot of different chefs put in a lot of time into this menu from myself to my direct regional chef to our complete chef team at our home mm-hmm. office as well.
You know, I the food looks delicious. I'm sure it's great. But to me, one of the most unique aspects of Big Rock is, of course, the Rock Cigar Club.
Yep.
Just, you know, which is above. And for those unfamiliar with cigar lounges, you know, what makes the Rock Cigar Club such a special experience? And, you know, and nowadays, Chris, you know, so many cigar clubs are now appealing to people in an age where a lot of interaction happens on social media.
Yeah, very much so. You know, the addition of the Rock Cigar Club upstairs above the restaurant is, you know, there's an exclusivity to it. We are we do have a yearly locker that gets you a number of different VIP accesses to different parties and discounted cigars and things like that up mm-hmm. there. And then there's also a to get up there, if you dine downstairs, it'll cost you $100 to get upstairs.
Okay.
After dining in, it's great. There's a window that looks out over the entire restaurant. So if you're depending on where you are in the club upstairs, you can look out over the restaurant while it's hustling and bustling
nice.
And gives you a nice vibe. But especially if you come in and you have a phenomenal dinner downstairs and really enjoyed yourselves and it's time for, you know, an after dinner cigar.
Yeah.
You head upstairs, have another cocktail or a glass of wine, enjoy a nice cigar and just kind of relax for a little bit. The vibe up there is a lot more low key. It's, you know, leather seats and
less it looks hustle and bustle.
Less hustle yeah. and bustle. yeah. Looks more like a study. It's a little bit more yeah. more calming and chill. It's all hardwood up there. It's really yeah. nice.
That's
nice.
Awesome. And you guys are also getting into the brunch game too, Sundays from 10 to 2.
We are. We started brunch on March 22nd, okay. Easter was really our first big brunch. The first two were kind of preview brunches, mm-hmm. and we've been doing brunch since. 10 to 2 every Sunday. It is a brunch buffet. With that brunch buffet also comes the option for made-to-order Belgian waffles and made-to-order omelets. We have quite a few. I think we have 51 items on our brunch buffet.
Ooh, wow.
From an entire cold table with shrimp cocktail, oysters, smoked salmon, and a couple different dips and spreads, an entire charcuterie table with sliced meats and gourmet cheeses, and then, you know, your typical brunch setting. We've got scrambled eggs, bacon, sausage,
cool.
Salmon, chicken, salt, and boca, and then we do sliced prime rib to order.
Oh, boy.
We do risotto right there in front of you. We mix it up in a big Parmesan wheel. And offer scallops and shrimp to go with it.
My goodness. It sounds so good.
Man.
It is Big Rock Italian Chop House. Chris Meyer is the executive chef. Thanks so much for coming today. We really appreciate it. The food looks absolutely outstanding. And I have a feeling we'll be popping in at some point.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Come and see us. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You got it. That's Chris Meyer, the executive chef at Big Rock Italian Chop House. And that is going to do it for us today. Have yourself a wonderful Monday. We will see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. And Kevin Dietz and I'll talk coming your way next here on WJR. Have a good one.